Once every 50 years is a year called the Yovel year, and this shares many similar laws to Shemitah, which is once every 7 years. For example, it's forbidden to work the land. And one of the laws which is unique to the Yovel year is that at the beginning of the 50th year, any land which had been bought from somebody in the last 50 years returns to its original owner, such that the original territories and borders which were set up in the times of Yeshua when the Jewish people entered into Eretz Yisrael, and each tribe received a different part of Eretz Yisrael, at the beginning of the Yovel year, it would go back to the sellers and it would always be kept by the inheritors and the descendants of the original tribe who was given that part of Eretz Yisrael. However, there are a number of exceptions. Elu she'elon chosen by Yovel, the following things which are considered to have been acquired by somebody, however, they do not go back to the original owner at the beginning of Yovel. Firstly, habachira, the double portion that a firstborn receives. We don't say that at the beginning of Yovel, that goes back to the father, as it were, and would therefore automatically be split by all of the inheritors, including his other brothers, equally. Rather, it's a full inheritance, that once he receives it, he receives that double portion forever. V'hayoreshes ishtoy, and one who inherits his wife upon his wife's death, according to this opinion of the Mishnah, this is a midoraisa law. According to the Torah, a man inherits all of his wife's property upon her death. So just like all inheritance, this is something which is permanent and nothing goes back to the wife and automatically the wife's other inheritors, her family at Yovel. Rather, we say that it's a real inheritance and the father and all of his family, the husband of that woman, can keep that money forever. One who performs yibum with his brother's wife. If his brother died without children, there is a mitzvah for him to marry his dead brother's wife. And upon doing so, he inherits all of the man's property, all of his possessions, and that is a real inheritance. And interestingly, the Torah compares this inheritance to the inheritance of a firstborn. So just like a firstborn's inheritance is permanent in nature, so too the one who performed yibum would inherit it forever. And also one who gives a gift. The entire concept of land going back to the original owner and the original tribe only applies to land which was sold. But if it was given as a gift, then it's considered to be a permanent gift and would not go back to the original owner. To Reb Meir, that's the opinion of Reb Meir. However, the Chachamim say matonah kemecher, a regular gift which is given by somebody has the same status as something which was sold. And according to the way that the Chachamim learn the psukim, that would mean that even a gift would go back to the original owners at the beginning of the Yovel year. Rabbi Elazar says, Kulon chosen by Yovel. All of the things which were mentioned go back to the original owner in the beginning of the Yovel year. Rabbi Elazar agrees with the Chachomim that a gift has the same status as a sale, and he also learns from Psukim that which a Bechor, a firstborn, receives has the same status as a gift. The language used by the Pasuk is loses loy pishnaim, to give him a double portion. Rabbi Elazar understands that to mean that it has the same status as a gift, and therefore, just like a gift is like a regular sale, in that it goes back at the beginning of Yovel, so to the inheritance of a firstborn. And that also means that one who performs yibum and inherits his brother's possessions, the Torah says he has the same status as a firstborn. So in the same way as a firstborn, his double portion is considered to be like a gift, and the law is that a gift goes back at the beginning of Yovel, so too the inheritance of somebody who performed Yibum. Now regarding the remaining example, that of the inheritance of one's wife, Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that midoraisa, one does not inherit his wife. Midoraisa, if somebody's wife dies, then her original family would inherit her possessions. Midrabbanan, they instituted that her husband should inherit her, but since it's a new enactment midrabbanan, we also look at that as somewhat of a gift, and therefore it would return in the beginning of the Yovel year. Rabbi Yochanan ben Berakhah says, Hayoreshes ishtoy, one who inherits his wife, and the Gemara explains that we're referring to a very specific type of inheritance, that he inherited a burial plot, or an area of multiple burial plots, belonging to his wife, and which was designated for the wife's family. That does go back to Yasid Ibn Amit Mishpacha. he's obligated to give that back to the family of his wife, since the burial plots were designated for them. However, this is only a Midrabbanan enactment so that it's not considered somewhat of a disgrace for them. But monetarily, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baruch is of the opinion that he does inherit all of his wife's possessions, and therefore, though he is obligated to give her family back the burial plots, they need to pay him for it. However, we minus off from that which they have to pay the value of her particular burial plot. Since he is obligated anyway to bury his wife, they certainly don't need to pay him to buy back the burial plot for his wife, since all of the monetary expenses for burying his wife specifically are incumbent upon him. However, if they want the rest of the burial plots, they would need to pay him, and he would be obligated, on a Midrabbanan level at least, to indeed give them back the burial plots. Perek Tes Mishnah Aleph, the final perek of the Masechta, concerns itself with the laws of Maisa Behema. Maisa Behema is the requirement to separate a tenth of one's animals, which are born each year. He brings all of his animals into a large pen, into an enclosure, and he allows them to pass through the opening to sort of leave the exit of the enclosure, and as each one leaves by itself, he counts them, 1, 2, 3, and when he reaches the 10th animal, he declares that animal as being Maiser Behema, and would make a mark on the animal, as the Mishnayos will later on explain. He makes a mark on the animal so that it is clear that that was the 10th animal, and that was the one which was designated to be Maiser Behema. Now, Maiser Behema is quite unique in that it doesn't need to be given to anybody. It is a tithe which needs to be brought out to Yerushalayim and bought as a korban, but it can be eaten by the owner himself. It's similar to Maiser Sheni with regards to produce. Maiser Sheni is a tenth of one's produce, which he needs to bring out to Yerushalayim and eat himself. Now, if the animal develops a wound or a blemish, and it therefore cannot be bought as a korban, it loses all of its sanctity, and one is able to use it for whatever he wants. The reason why the laws of Maaseh Sheni are put in Maseches Bechoros is because many of the laws, particularly with regards to eating the korban and the procedure of bringing the korban, are similar to that of a firstborn animal. Begins the perek. Maaseh Behema Noi Ba'oitz V'Chutz La'Oretz. The laws and the requirement to separate a tenth of one's animals applies both in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael. There's an argument whether this only refers to designating the Maaseh Behema, but if it came out from outside of Eretz Yisrael, then we would need to wait for it to develop a wound or a blemish and become invalidated from being bought as a korban, and then just be eaten as a regular animal, or even used, it would lose all its sanctity. Or whether the Mishnah means it's literally exactly the same, and it can even be bought as a korban, just like Maaseh Behema, which came from inside of Eretz Yisrael. Alright, it applies both when there is a Beis HaMikdash standing and when there is not. Once again, although obviously when the Beis HaMikdash is not here, it cannot be brought as a korban, it nevertheless needs to be designated, and then once again we would wait for it to develop a blemish or a wound which would invalidate it from being brought as a korban, and then it would be treated as a regular animal. But the actual mitzvah of designating the 10th animal still applies, even when it's not relevant to bring it as a korban practically. B'chulin, it applies to animals which have not got sanctity already, but not with animals which have been designated to the Beis HaMikdash to be brought as korbanos. If such an animal gives birth to an animal, that would not be counted as one of the 10 animals which are counted towards Maaseh Behema. And this is also learnt from Psukim. The Pasuk says that once the Maaseh Behema is designated, then Yiyeh Kodesh, it will be holy, which implies that it wasn't holy until now. V'nei b'bokor v'tzayin, it applies to both Bokar, cattle, which refers to the family of cows and bulls. Uvatsoin, which refers to sheep and goats. However, because these are still considered to be two very different types of species, one cannot separate this tithe of the animals from this onto this, meaning we look at them as two totally separate categories, and all of the cows and bulls are counted in and of themselves, and the sheep and goats are counted by themselves. Bakavosim va'izim, it applies to both sheep and goats, and umis asmizel zeh. These can be counted together towards the Maaseh Behema, as the Mishnah will go on to explain, because the Torah itself already splits the animals into categories of bokar and tzoyin, and since the term tzoyin includes both sheep and goats, We see that the Torah puts them into one category in terms of the Maaser Behemah requirement. In addition, the requirement to separate a tenth of the animals applies bechodosh to new animals which were born that year, uvayoshon, and also to animals which were born earlier on in a previous year. If he didn't separate it at the end of that year when he was supposed to, we'll see later on when exactly he's supposed to separate the Maaser Behemah, but if he didn't do that and now he has animals which were born in two different years, he is still obligated to separate them as Maaser Behemah. However, they cannot be included in the same category, in the same counting for Maaser Behemah as animals which were born during a different year. Now, the Mishnah elaborates on the source for the aforementioned laws. Shehoyah Badin. It could have been argued, Moim HaChodosh VaYoshon She'in and Klaim Sebozeh. If animals which were born in different years, literally animals which are new, animals which are old, and they are not considered to be kilayim with one another. Kilayim is a prohibition to interbreed different species of animals. Now here we're talking about even the same species of animals, but they were born during different years. It's permitted for them to mate together, so we see on the one hand that they're considered to be more similar to each other, part of the same category. We don't look at them as being so different. And yet the law is that Inris Asmizel Zeh, it's forbidden to take and count Maaser Behemah from one on the other, meaning we do not look at them as one category. So HaKavosim Vo'izim, sheep and goats, Shein Kilayim Zeh Bo Zeh, that they are considered to be Kilayim with one another, it's forbidden to allow them to interbreed and to mate with each other, so we see that they are considered to be very different species. Is it not all the more so that they should be considered to be different categories in terms of the counting for Maaser Behemah? That's what one could have argued. However, Talmud Lomar, that's what the Pasuk comes to teach us otherwise, and the Pasuk splits it into categories, Bokor Votsoin. The Torah itself makes it very clear that Tsoin is considered to be a category, and included in Tsoin is both sheep and goats, Mashma Kol Tsoin Echod. The implication is that all animals which are considered to be tzoin are included in this one category. Mr. Bass, what happens if somebody owns multiple animals, but they graze and are raised very far away from each other? The law is that they do not combine for the sake of Maaser Behemah. They would need to be counted separately. If one had, let's say, only five animals in one area and five animals in another area, then he would be totally exempt from the mitzvah of Maaser Behemah, because that obviously only applies if he has at least 10 animals, and those don't combine. How much do they combine? What is considered to be animals which graze together enough? Maaser Behemah mitzvah of kumla regel behemah roya. Animals combine together as long as they are within a distance that the shepherd is still able to just about see them and watch over them as they walk and graze. What exactly is that distance? Shish asar mil, in total, it is 16 mil. Now, that means it's 8 mil in each direction. That is the maximum distance which a shepherd is able to still see the sheep, or whatever animal is being discussed. And any animals within those 8 mil in any direction of the shepherd would be included in one category for counting Maaser Behemah. Now, it goes without saying, therefore, that Hoyobin Elu Elu Shleshim Ushtaim Mil, if there was 32 mil in between two different groups of animals, obviously, in a Mitzdarfin, they wouldn't combine. Even if there was 16 mil, they wouldn't combine. However, in this case where there is 32 mil, Hoyobin Emtsa, if there was another group of animals in the middle, so that means that we have now three groups of animals which are distanced, they are within 16 mil of each other, such that the middle group of animals is able to combine with both outer groups of animals, but the outer groups are too far away from each other. Nevertheless, because the middle group of animals are close enough to each group, Mevium Asam Ba'emtsa, he's able to bring both outer groups of animals to the middle, and to bring all of the animals together, and to count them as one category, one group, for Maaser Behemah. Now, Meir just adds an additional law. Now, Meir says, HaYarden, the Yarden River, Mafsik leMaaser Behemah, makes a break and a split for the laws of Maaser Behemah, such that if somebody had animals on one side of the Yarden inside of Eretz Yisrael, and other animals on the other side of the Yarden, which is considered to be outside of Eretz Yisrael, even though the Yarden River itself is much less than 8 mil, they still would not combine, and he learns this out of Pesukim, which imply that the Yarden is considered to be a border which splits off between those two areas. Mishnah Gimel, it is learned from Pesukim that Halakuach Ishinit Lematono, a buyer or somebody who receives a gift of animals, Potter Maisa Behema, is exempt from separating the Maisa Behema tithe if, for example, the owner hadn't yet done so, and he gave him at least 10 animals. He is not obligated to separate one of them as Maisa Behema. Now, an additional law, which is also learnt from the Pesukim, is that partners, if there is a joint ownership of at least two people in the animals, then they are exempt from Maisa Behema. The obligation only applies if it's owned totally by an individual. The Mishnah is going to compare this to another area of halacha, of law, that having a partnership makes a difference. And that is regarding the obligation to give a half shekel coin once a year. And as can be imagined, at a time that everybody needs to give a half shekel coin, the demand for half shekel coins would be higher, and it would be worth more, such that two half shekel coins would essentially be worth more than one single shekel coin. And this is one of the reasons given for the requirement of adding a kolbein. A kolbein is a small addition that when somebody gives a full shekel, for example, he gives his contribution of the half shekel, and he also wants to contribute on behalf of somebody else. And so instead of giving two half shekel coins, he just gives one full shekel coin. However, this is not actually worth as much as two half shekel coins, and therefore he would need to add on a small amount of money, which is known as a kolbein, in order to make up that difference. That's one of the many reasons given for the requirement of a kolbein. Now, the particular partnership which is going to be discussed in the Mishnah is brothers who inherited their father's possessions. And until the brothers have split the inheritance, we do not view them as being like regular partners who have joint ownerships. Regular partners have their own monetary domain, and they join together such that each one's monetary rights and domain covers half of that which they own. However, in the case of the brothers, there's a different understanding, and it's as if almost the dead father's monetary domain, it's as if it continues and is being held by his children. They don't have their own individual monetary domains and rights over here, but they are continuing. They sort of have the right to hold the monetary rights and domain of their father. The difference being, do we look at it as multiple monetary domains joining together in a partnership, or we view it as one single monetary domain? Now, if the brothers split the inheritance, and then they decide to join up together again as partners, in this case they would be considered like regular partners, and it would be multiple monetary domains. So this just says, so Achna Shutfin, brothers who are partners, which means that they already split the inheritance and then joined together again. If one brother decides to give a half shekel on behalf of another brother as well, and so he gives a full shekel, that's just like anybody giving a half shekel on behalf of somebody else. So shechiyav b'kolbein, they would be obligated in this kolbein addition. Now, p'turim ma'aser behema, they would be exempt from ma'aser behema, just like regular partners. However, the shechiyav ma'aser behema, brothers who inherit something and are obligated in ma'aser behema, when would this be? This would be if they haven't yet split the inheritance, and therefore we view it as one individual, single monetary domain. So the obligation of Maisa Behema is incumbent upon this monetary domain, which is held by the brothers. And in such a case, if a brother gives a half shekel on behalf of the other brother, really they're both just holding on to the monetary domain of their father. It's not like two different individuals, and therefore Petrumina Kolbein, they would be exempt from adding on a Kolbein. Now the Mishnah really explains this and elaborates. Konu mitzvis sabayis, if they acquired the animals or the possessions which are under discussion from the tfusis sabayis, which means that they are holding on to the father's monetary domain, but they haven't yet split the inheritance, then chayovin, then they are obligated in maisa behema, v'im lav patorin. If not, then they are exempt. What does it mean, if not? That it would be in a case where cholku v'chozv nishtatfu, where they split the inheritance and then went back and made a partnership with each other, the brothers. In that case, chayovim b'kolbein, they are obligated in a kolbein if one of them designates a half shekel on behalf of the other. just like any two individuals of Turum and Maisa Behema, and they would be exempt from Maisa Behema since they are like irregular partners of two different individuals.